Well, a very good Wednesday, middle of the week. Some still call it hump day.
Woo-hoo!
I do not. But anyway, I know the camel does. And I love the camel. I love that we've been able to keep the camel, you know, with things being the way they are. At least they're not as bad as New York City, where the communist, anti-capitalist, anti-Semitic politicians are now the, we just call them the Democrat Party in New York. Now, there are a lot of Democrats that don't want to be thought of as that way, but that's the way they're going to be thought of if they've lost control of their party, which they have. In very much the same way they claim Republicans have lost control of their party. You know, it's fun to watch them go back and forth, both parties, complete losers, not doing anything for us, but fighting among themselves and acting as if the party is the most important thing that they've got going on. That's really unfortunate. But we're going to try to turn this into relentless positive radio, as difficult as that might be. We're also being told on one of the news stations that many blacks are not celebrating the 4th of July. Why would these blacks deny all of the blacks that contributed to our country's greatness? What? Do they not see that? Do they not accept that themselves? That's sad and unfortunate. Yesterday, we had a great day. All positive. The 100th anniversary yesterday of Mark Snethkamp. We were live from Snethkamp Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram. Bill Snethkamp is the official name, his brother and his dad's names. We were in Highland Park. And I thought it was a great, fun time. Didn't you, Michael?
Yeah, we had a great time. We talked to Mark Snethkamp, and we really got the sense that although it's a very successful business that has expanded all the way up to Gaylord, it still felt like you're at a mom and pop shop. We talked to a very satisfied customer. We talked to their operations manager, and there was a majestic dog and delicious burger. So 10
Ruby,
out of 10.
Ruby. Yeah, and I'll never be able to pronounce what kind of dog it is. It's some highfalutin Italian dog.
I think
water dog.
Yeah, I think it translates to an Italian water dog.
There you go. Well, that's good. That's the way it works.
And that dog wanted your burger really bad.
But stayed very attentive to me, waiting for me to either fall over dead and then they'd get the food
right,
or dropping the burger.
Right.
There was less chance of me dropping the burger once I had my grip on that burger, because it was good. They were grilling them.
I'm glad neither happened.
I'm kind of glad, too. Yeah. Thank you for that. Thank you for that. So what else do we have going on here? Geez, there's so much going on. The Congress has passed a bipartisan housing bill as the cost of living has gone up. I haven't dived into that.
So, yeah, there's a number of things that bill calls for. The part I like the most is that it limits private equity and buying up a bunch of houses and either renting them out or selling them themselves, because that's been a big driver of these housing prices going up, and it puts home ownership out of reach for a lot of people.
I'm totally against these big corporations buying houses unless they want to buy my house in Florida.
Right. Other than that,
I'm totally against it.
Right.
Michigan gas prices down 73 cents, hitting the lowest price since April. Is that still standing, even though the war is probably not over and the government is telling the president he can't continue the war? Let them fight among themselves.
Well, that's the tricky thing about reporting on gas prices, right? As soon as it's reported, it's outdated. But they do seem to be down significantly. They're hovering around $4 a gallon right now, where it was hovering around $5 not too long ago.
I cannot wait to ask Andy Arena, with his background. He's the director of the Detroit Crime Commission, former special agent in charge of the FBI Detroit office. And that is the question: why in the world was there a Nancy Guthrie ransom note that claimed she was dead that came out a long time ago, but they're just now releasing it? What's the point of that?
Yeah, I don't know if it had something to do with the investigation, but you know, it makes a lot of things make sense because do you remember, it was a video that Savannah Guthrie and her siblings put out, and they said, we heard your message loud and clear, and we're ready to pay, and this is the only way we're going to find peace. And I remember you and I saying, Paul, that it sounds like they know that
something.
This, yeah, it isn't going to
They
end
just wanted
well.
The body back at this point.
Right.
They need closure.
Right, and they need to
They're
mourn.
They're not
going to
get it at this point.
Yeah, and then, you know, I know most people were happy to see Savannah Guthrie come back to work, but there was a lot of people saying, well, how can she come back to work if her mom's still missing? Well, if she knew her mom was deceased, you know, it probably made it – it makes more sense that she would come back to work.
Yeah, but that's tough for people to say, well, you can't come back to work. Your mom's missing. Come on. We've all had horrific circumstances and situations one way or another. Not our mother's missing, but there's all kinds of things that happen in life.
Right.
And – P.S. Life goes on, whether you're a participant or not. And if you want to, you know, keep your family together, keep your head together, you continue with your life. I didn't hear people were concerned or upset she was coming back because her mother was still missing.
Yeah, like I said, most people
get a life, folks.
Were supportive. But, yeah, and Paul, I think you're probably like me. When you go through something, you know, you go through the death of a loved one or something, there comes a point where you need to get back to normal.
Absolutely. You just have to. And that's why you have other family members and friends, too, hopefully supportive friends. I didn't read the story because I have to tell you, I have not paid attention to Tucker Carlson since he left Fox.
Right.
I really haven't. I know that a lot of people have. He's gotten millions and millions of dollars from his millions and millions of viewers on whatever social media place he has his show. I guess he does his show still. I don't watch it. Don't even know where it is. Don't know. But he has made a pronouncement and he gets attention because it's on my rundown here. I'm out, says Tucker Carlson. He says he's done supporting the Republican Party. Well, he's a little late because actually it appeared that the Republican Party was done supporting Tucker Carlson.
Yeah, and I think a number of things are going on. Number one, it seems like after the death of Charlie Kirk, a lot of these high-profile political pundits have been kind of going at each other, and I think they all kind of want to fill the vacuum that was left by Charlie Kirk. Also, Tucker Carlson has not been a fan of what the United States has been doing with Israel, in Israel, and he's been very vocal about that.
Right.
And like you said, Paul, I don't pay much attention to him. I'm guessing there's probably other things he has issues with, but I think those are two big driving factors of Tucker Carlson falling out of favor with the Republican Party and vice versa.
Here's what I miss, and when I travel, I always pick it up because it's at every airport, the New York Post.
Yeah.
They're never afraid to say what they want to say and what they believe. And here's the headline in today's New York Post, late city edition. The Hateful Slate. And it's got a picture of Mamdani with one of the people he was backing. Three Israel cop and private property hating Mamdanites. Is that what they call them? Mamdanites.
He's a catchier name, but we'll workshop it.
Yeah. Win Democrat congressional primaries. The Hateful Slate. They're openly hating Israel, hating cops, and hating private property or capitalism. It's astonishing. And again, we couldn't have a better opportunity for a learning moment, a teaching moment. Look at how these people who are coming to this country are reacting to what they're finding and loving in America. And we have these jerks, these idiots, these low intellect people, Mamdani and the other communists, who are telling us that we're all wrong. America is all wrong, and they're going to fix it. We just had a guy at a coffee shop get refused service because he was Jewish. And you couldn't get Mamdani to say that was bad. You could not get him. I watched it just now. You couldn't get him to say, well, that's wrong. Everybody has a right to their opinion and to their religion and their faith and their culture and their whatever. That's what they claim. But you know it's not true. just like the free grocery stores that he promised not happening, or the free buses not happening. When will these people wake up and smell the coffee? I don't know. I'm not sure they ever will. I'm having some coffee right now. That coffee smells good. I think I'll stick with it. We're underway with soon relentless positive radio. Paul W. Smith in focus on WJR. Haven't talked to Tanya J. Powers, the great Fox News correspondent and WJR contributor, in a while, but we're going to change that because Tanya Powers is with us right now. TJ.
Good morning. I think you should say good afternoon.
Yeah, now I know we talked for years in the morning, but now we're together in the afternoon. How are things in New York City after the big primaries last night?
They're great. We have lovely weather today. The sun did come out. I can report that the world has kept turning. So yes, we're okay.
Well, you know, it's funny because depending on which channel you watch for the various news channels, you think that maybe the world has come to an end. I love the headline on the New York Post today, but I always love the headlines on the New York Post. But meanwhile, Mr. Mamdani now is a power broker. All of his candidates won. Three, I guess he backed very heavily three fellow communist, socialist Democrats. Call them what you will. They're going to call them communists. They all won in their primaries last night.
It was a Democratic Socialist candidate and a candidate and one Democrat that kind of, you know, is also kind of leans toward some of the issues that the socialists lean towards. So that's kind of, you know, where they all get lumped together, but that's the distinction. And yes, you are correct. Depending on who you listen to, you would think that New York had completely just burned to the ground. I can report from Manhattan that it has not. The fact that he backed these three candidates, this was being looked at as what is his political strength out, you know, aside from the, you know, the people who voted for him for mayor. You know, he's been in office for, 6 months now? And, you know, this was the first test of, do the voters want to, you know, go with whoever he endorsed? They did in these cases. I think it goes a little further than just Mamdani endorsed them, they won. I think there's a couple of other layers in there that I want to put in for context. This sort of, you have to look at the candidates who they were running against. So you have the Congressman Adriano Espaillat, who was beaten by Mamdani's pick, Daria Liza Avila Chevalier, who is a Democratic Socialist. She has not held political office, cast herself as an outsider. He was in his fifth term, you know, leads the Congressional Hispanic Caucus, fifth term, like been there a while.
This guy's the influential chairman of the Congressional Hispanic Caucus, beaten by somebody who'd never run for anything.
Right. I mean, and to be fair, we've seen that, you know, most notably in the Republicans with Donald Trump. I mean, he had not held public office either. So it has happened before on the other side as well. But, you know, that is one of the reasons it's getting a lot of attention. Another Mamdani ally was a state assembly member, Claire Valdez, who defeated the handpicked successor of the retiring Congresswoman Nydia Velazquez, who was first elected in 1992. The third candidate backed by Mamdani was the former city comptroller, Brad Lander, from New York City. He defeated Representative Dan Goldman, who was a two-term incumbent, challenged him from the left, and won. He's the guy who ran as a Democrat, Lander was. So the thing that, like I said, there's a couple of other layers I want to point out. A couple of these, you know, as you mentioned, longtime holders of these seats. What we're seeing, especially among some Democrats, is, you know, the rumblings of, and this has been going on for a while, this is not new, of, hey, these people have been there a long time. Why don't we get some new people in there who, you know, maybe reflect whatever the values they would like to have and see in public office? That is one of the things that we're seeing with the Democrats, especially, is the push to, okay, well, some of these folks have been there too long. Let's get somebody else in.
Well, do you think, that's a good point. Do you think it's more a rally against the incumbents or more a rally for what these new people believe in?
That's a good question, and I'm not quite sure the answer of it. The other thing that I would note that's kind of getting lost in this, because the headline really is, you know, Mamdani, socialism, you know, that's basically what we've seen, as you mentioned, kind of the headlines all day. The other part of this is where the stance was in regard to the candidates who were, especially the incumbents, what their stance on Israel was. I don't think that should be overlooked for context about who won some of these races and the you know, support for Israel, not the Jewish people, but for Israel, that some of the Democrats have been kind of loud about and have put out there the way that they feel about this. It is not just the lockstep kind of thing that we've seen in the past. It's kind of different now. And I think that also may have contributed to some of the outcomes of these races that we saw. I mean, when you put this in context, this was three primary races. Granted, they are in heavily blue districts. That should not be overlooked as well. But three primaries out of, you know, 435 House seats. So that's, again, it's notable because of the Democratic Socialist angle of this.
Yeah.
But just to put it in perspective, that's kind of, you know, that's what we're looking at here.
Tanya J. Powers, Fox News correspondent, WJR contributor extraordinaire. It might be too early to know this, but do you have any idea what kind of a voter turnout for the primaries last night?
I don't know what those numbers are. I'm not sure if they have come out with them yet or not. I will be looking to see, because I know as far as early voting, there were a lot of people who, I think that, I don't remember the number right off the top of my head. I want to say it was 170-something thousand that had voted early during the days of early voting. I don't have the number in front of me, but I know it was probably around or north of 150,000 people, which is small city.
Right. I mean, in a city that has, I keep hearing the number, for example, 1 million Jewish people. I wonder, I haven't called yet today, but I wonder how my dear Jewish friends in New York City, I lived there for 5 years, I made a lot of friends and have stayed in touch. I'm wondering how they feel on a day like today.
Yeah, that is a really good question. I mean, primaries generally don't have giant turnout anyway, especially not in midterm years. We generally see the big turnout on presidential years, so it kind of goes along with the turnouts of past, but I will be interested to see those numbers as well.
Always a pleasure, Tanya. How's life? Good, I hope.
It's good. Like I said, the sun is shining. The buildings are still standing. We're good.
It's another great day in New York City. Thank you for being our eyes and ears on the pavement there, Tanya. God bless you.
Anytime. Thank you.
Tanya J. Powers. I just called her TJ for the first time. I don't know if she likes it or not. I won't do it again. Tanya J. Powers, Fox News correspondent, WJR contributor, here with Paul W. Smith on WJR. The United States Supreme Court sided with President Trump and his administration in an immigration case dealing with the government's power over green card holders accused of crimes. The 6-3 decision centers on an immigration officer's 2012 decision to put lawful permanent resident Muk Choi Lau on immigration parole when he returned from a short trip to China because he had been accused of a counterfeiting crime. I think counterfeiting clothing, I guess. Michael Bulata of the famous Bulata Law, he's a federal criminal defense attorney and former federal prosecutor, joins us to talk about the Supreme Court siding with the Trump administration. Michael, nice to talk with you.
Good morning. Good morning, Paul. Nice to be here.
Good afternoon. Nice to have you with us, too. That's two guests in a row that fell back to my morning schedule. And heck, I've been doing this for, I don't know, a year or two, Mike Parsons. How long has it been? It's been a while. So it's afternoon. It may feel like morning, and sometimes it does. I know exactly how you feel. What do you think about this? Is the Supreme Court on the right track? Do you agree with it? Do you disagree? It doesn't matter what we say, but it's nice to get your learned opinion.
Yeah, so let me just say for the listeners what exactly happened. So what happened in the Blanche versus Lau decision was that the Supreme Court changed the ordinary rule, at least the rule in the Second Circuit where this occurred, which was that if you're a green card holder and you leave the country and you come back, you're still a permanent resident under the green card. And if the ICE folks wanted to change that, they would have to have serious evidence that you committed a crime of what they call moral turpitude, meaning some crime that involves dishonesty or some serious felony like murder or something. But they'd have to have clear and convincing evidence of that. And in this case, Lau had a pending case for clothing counterfeiting, as you said, but it wasn't adjudicated yet. And so what Lau was arguing is, hey, it wasn't adjudicated. You don't have clear and convincing evidence. You have to wait until I'm convicted, essentially, to change me from a permanent legal resident to just an applicant. And the Supreme Court said, no, that is not the case. The ICE officer at the border, they can treat a green card holder as a brand new applicant when they're returning into the country if they believe that they might have a criminal issue, but they don't have to prove it or have clear and convincing evidence at that time that they're coming into the country. So essentially, under the ruling, you could have a green card like Mr. Lau did and come back into the country, and the ICE people could put you into custody and detain you and then deport you. So it is significant in that, you know, we're putting, in my view, and this is why I don't agree with the decision, at least the practical consequences of the decision, which could obviously be amended by congressional action, which is I hope they do. But what it does now is it essentially puts the cart before the horse. Someone is removed from this permanent resident status based on the belief of the officer, in which can be before anything was adjudicated or decided. As a former federal prosecutor and now a defense attorney, I like consequences to come after proof, not the other way around.
Interesting, yeah.
So that's why I don't think it's a good practical decision. I haven't gone into the weeds of the law and their justification for it, but practically speaking, I don't like it, and I hope it gets changed by congressional action.
Honest to goodness, do you think these Supreme Court justices, what was it, a 6-3 decision? Those six justices still trying to curry favor with the president and his sweeping immigration crackdown?
I'm not sure what their motivations are. There could be many motivations, but I hope that they really believe that their decision is the law and what the law should be. But I'm just saying, from a practical policy standpoint, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
Better to wait till somebody has not just been accused of a crime, but found to be guilty of the crime. Generally speaking, that is the way the judicial system works in this country. In fact, we go as far as to say everybody is innocent until proven guilty.
Yeah, and the other thing I want to point out, too, is the people that have green cards, a lot of them have built lives here in the U.S. They have jobs, they've had families here, and to treat them as applicants, you know, after maybe 10, 15 years living in the United States or longer, I just don't think that's fair without the proof. So,
what do you think is going to happen now that since the court, I haven't heard anything yet today, but the court's also considering some cases over President Trump's push to end birthright citizenship?
Oh, gosh. I don't know what's going to happen with that one. I really think that sanity will prevail, and I think just looking at the text of the Constitution and the stare decisis, the prior decisions of the Supreme Court, I think that rule should stand, not personally. But
well, Michael, you know, before you finish your laugh there, which was a hearty laugh.
I can laugh much heartier than that.
All right. Well, all right. I'll call that then just kind of a mild chuckle. All right. I'll say chuckle. Here's the only thing that bothers me about the people who are reporting this. The one thing they're not reporting is when the signers and when the people who thought about this and when they came up with all these things, it was basically for a different reason. But my point now is they never envisioned businesses being set up, which there are businesses set up to bring pregnant women into the United States so they can have their baby here and get birthright citizenship. These guys didn't think about that when they were making these laws, and that's a very real problem right now.
Right, just like they didn't think about, and when they made the Second Amendment, they didn't think about assault rifles and a lot of the things that were.
That is correct.
School shootings. I mean, the Constitution has to expand, and what it should do, and it's, I believe it's built that way, to adapt to the changes in society and the social changes. And so because this has been such a part of our country that if you're born in the country, you are a citizen of the country, I think that's part of who we are. And so why I say that is I think you could legislate out these companies. You could make it illegal to have a company, you know, that's trying to bring people here to have babies. You could legislate that without...
So do that without
yeah, you don't have to...
Don't throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Thank you. I was just going to go with that baby analogy. Thank you.
All right. Well, one of these days, I'm going to get a heartier laugh from you, Michael. God bless you.
I'll get you one.
Okay. Well, don't just fake it now. Nothing worse than a faked laugh. Michael Bulotta of Bulotta Law, federal criminal defense attorney and former federal prosecutor. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
1242. Well, let's call it now 1243 at 760 WJR. Paul W. Smith in focus on this Wednesday, June 24th. Daron Levin coming up in just a moment, the freelance journalist born in Israel, served in the Israeli military. He goes to Israel rather often, and we're going to see what he has to say about the Senate now voting to limit President Trump's war power in Iran. Here's your chance to win a trip to see two country superstars, Jason Aldean and Luke Bryan in Vegas. Double the hits, one unforgettable night. We've got your flights, hotel, and concert tickets covered. The Double Down Tour. Aldean and Brian, co-headlining with special guest John Pardee and Chase Matthews, all live under the neon lights. Prize provided by BBR Music Group. Text this hour's national keyword, PARTY, to 95819. That's PARTY, P-A-R-T-Y, to 95819. We'll text you back to confirm your entry. Data and messaging rates may apply. Please, please don't text and drive, but you know that. Official rules and more information at WJR.com. Well, the New York Post headline, three Israel cop and private property hating Mamdaniites win Democrat congressional primaries. I can't imagine how my friend Daron Levin or my many friends who live in New York City, who happen to be Jewish, feel about all of this. And Daron, I guess I'll just ask. First of all, welcome back. And how do you feel about that?
Well, as somebody who lives in Bloomfield Hills, I feel like the people of New York could probably get better representation, but isn't that what makes this country great, is that every wacky idea and every off the chart person somehow has a chance in this free society that we live in to persuade the voters and to get the voters to follow them, and the consequences will follow, I'm sure, for the people of New York. And I guess they won't be great, because socialism is something that really is an idea that has been discredited so many times, and what we have now is a lot of young voters who need to understand why it basically doesn't work, but they'll find out eventually, and then things will get better until we have new young voters who want to find out why it doesn't work.
You know, all these young voters need to do is pay attention to the people coming to our country for the World Cup and seeing how much they love America and Americans.
Yeah, people are fighting to get into this country, as we've known for our entire lifetimes. And there aren't too many places in the world where people are fighting to get in like they are in the United States. So it's amazing sometimes how we disparage and turn on our own culture. And this is one of the features of I think, what has happened and why Israel has become sort of the punching bag for young people, because they don't really understand the identity and the affinity between U.S. culture and Israeli culture, and why the two are sort of symbiotic and so mutually beneficial for one another. But a lot of it has to do with the creation of wealth, the creation of value, the idea of freedom, the idea of openness, the idea of democracy. And if you look in the Middle East today, that's really the only place you're going to find it is in Israel.
Let's. You're so flexible. This isn't. Now we can talk about what we asked you to come on to talk
that's
about.
Okay.
The Senate.
Listen, it's all about the world. It's about transition, isn't it?
Yes, sir. And you do it very well. The Senate, for
the
first
time,
approved a war powers resolution this week seeking to block U.S. military action against Iran. As lawmakers warily watch President Donald Trump's efforts to resolve a conflict that the administration launched on its own and now needs Congress to fund. Your take on this?
Well, look, everybody knows what the polls are saying right now, which is that there's not a lot of popular support for Israel in the United States. And the people who pay particular attention to this are our elected officials. So now you're going to find all kinds of people who used to say nice things about Israel will say lousy things about Israel and vote against Israel because they think it's going to get them votes at the polls, which is too bad. Obviously, we want representatives who stand on principle. But I think a lot of what happened in the Senate is very performative, meaning it's symbolic, it's for show, it doesn't really affect anything, but it's not unimportant. It is important to understand that Israel used to be a country that was supported by the Democratic Party, and it's in the process of being dumped by the Democratic Party here in Michigan and across the United States, which is quite a shame.
It is truly a shame. But is it possible that this President Trump, truly was the only person in the country, if they've been paying attention, and he may not have been, to realize that Benjamin Netanyahu will always do what he feels is best for the Israeli people? And so to think that he would step aside while Hezbollah freely from Lebanon is bombing Israel, that he wouldn't react and respond to, I mean, that it seems hard to imagine the president could be so uninformed about that.
Well, look, the United States and Donald Trump have interests, and Benjamin Netanyahu and Israel have interests. And there isn't a perfect alignment between those interests, and you're exactly right. The Hezbollah is getting ready to try to pull what Hamas pulled on October 7th, 2023, in northern Israel. They've already uncovered tunnels. They found plans. They plan to invade the north if they can, murder hundreds, if not thousands, of people, take hundreds back hostage, and create the kind of situation that the Hamas created. And by the way, these people, what we call Hezbollah, this is the front line of the IRGC. These people are completely supported
and directed and trained by Iran. Running out of time, I'm sorry to say. But we always love having you on, and we will do it again soon because there's so much more to talk about. Daron Levin, freelance journalist, all-around great guy. Stay with us. Our number two on this Wednesday, middle of the week, June 24th. Honest to goodness, we're nearing the end of June? I don't know. I'm not ready for how fast the months are going by.
We better get ready. We're almost halfway to Christmas, Paul.
And did summer officially start on Father's Day?
Isn't that the
official June 21st or something like that?
June 21st or the 20th, yeah, is the summer solstice. Hold on, let me. June 21st, yep. So we are,
officially summer.
3 days into summer, yes.
And before you know it, it's over.
Right.
Which I don't mean to. I mean, this is not relentless positive radio to remind us of that. But here it is what it is. Somebody said it. I saw it on something on television about each day being a gift. Somebody said that. And, of course, I've been saying that for years. And for those of you who are on your way to making this day and every day count because each day is a gift. Good for you. That's what we all need to do.
You know what I often think of, Paul?
No.
The story that you tell about earlier in your career, you were working so hard to, do a number of different things and make a career for yourself that you looked up outside and you realized that you missed the fall because all the leaves were off the trees and you said you completely missed it.
Oh, you know, Well, I'm glad that had an impact on you. I was speaking from my heart on that. It's true. I was in sales. I had a morning television show. I had an afternoon radio show. I had so many things going on that I remember the last time I looked up at the trees, they had green leaves on them. And the next time I looked up, all the leaves were gone. And I realized I missed a season.
Right.
And that can happen to you. And it's not good. I thought it might have been the other story I've told. And that is this. And this one's truly sad. I have had hanging in my closet, not anymore. In fact, if you notice, I dress down all the time. I wear blue jeans. Generally, if I'm going out and I have to be dressed up, a white cotton button-down shirt from Kirkland brand at Costco.
Right.
And a pretty good blue sport coat. I have a few pretty good blue sport coats. And that's what I wear. After purchasing, I wish I were kidding, hundreds of suits.
Wow.
Over the years. And they're all hanging somewhere. Plus, a lot of them have been donated and given away. But here's what I'm getting at, the point. And this is a lesson for us all. I would find out at the outlet, I missed the Neiman Marcus outlet, I'd find a very expensive suit and get it for a very good price. It was still expensive because it was a very expensive good suit. Brioni or no reason to go through names. And I would hang that suit in my closet and say, I'm saving this for a really important event. Mm. I'm saving this shirt, this tie, this suit for a very important occasion. And it would sit there in my closet as many important days went by. Most of all of our days, if we pay attention, are important. But by the time I reached for that suit, it didn't fit anymore.
Wow.
We don't want to do that, friends. We want to live each day to the fullest. We know that we are being given a gift by making each and every day count, because each day is a gift. And Kim introduced the one that was a gut punch, QTR, quality time remaining. We have no idea how much quality time remaining we have. That next phone call with your mom, your dad, your best friend, your loved one, it could be the last. We don't know that. Nobody says, oh, well, this will be the last phone call I have with that person, or the last time I have a chance to see that person, or whatever. So we have to bear that in mind and do something about it. And that's what I hope that I make clear to you, my friends tuned in, my family tuned in to this program. I'm just thankful I can still be with you from noon to two. My plan is to be with you for the rest of time. That probably will not happen, although I'm not betting against that, but
it's worth a shot.
It probably will not happen, but that's the goal at this point. Well, then you better take better care of yourself, Paul. I know somebody said that, probably Kim, a loved one, no doubt. Well, I'm taking the first step because, as I announced on the air at the fireworks, I've got an appointment with Dr. Sumit Singla, the world's greatest guy in his line of work. And tomorrow I go in. Tomorrow I won't be on the air. Is Marie? No, somebody else is on. But I'm getting what everybody my age should get and younger, a colonoscopy. And not enough people talk about it. They go, well, you don't want to talk about that. Yeah, I do. It's like getting your teeth cleaned or to their end of the body. But it's like doing anything that you should do.
Yeah, and you know, it's
shouldn't
important.
Shouldn't be a thing that we're embarrassed to talk about.
Yeah, we should talk openly about it because we all have to do it. We should do it.
Should do it.
And I got to say, Paul, this might be the most anticipated colonoscopy in Detroit radio history.
And then the next thing I've got to do, if I'll get time and call my doctor, my other doctor, and my general GP or whatever we call our regular doctors anymore, and I need to get that calcium scan of my heart. I had it done a few years ago, but I haven't done it lately, and I have to make sure I'm not building up lots of calcium.
Yeah, and I hear that's one of the most important tests you can do.
I think it is.
When it comes to heart health.
I believe it is. So, you know, and I signed up for that. I think it's called Foundation Medicine, where you go and they take enough blood out of you to make you pass out, but they do like 500 blood tests. I paid for it, and I still haven't done it.
Oh, yeah.
I have not done it. I have to do it. I paid for it already. And I should do it now because I've had to stop taking all my supplements and all my stuff over the last 7 days. Now would be the time to do it. But I
right, get
not,
a real
not,
reading.
Yeah, haven't done it. Anyway, so we all have to take care of ourselves. By the way, I want to thank you for choosing to be an important part of the best and brightest audience in all of radio. That's not just for me. And that's not just my show. It's for all of WJR, and it was decided by the Michigan Association of Broadcasters. So from Ann Thomas and Steve Finiteri and Mike and all the other folks, everyone that you don't know on the radio deserve that accolade, and we pass it along all the time and thank the people that make it possible for us to do our jobs day in and day out. Even we had Ray Templin out to my equipment and going over it today. We'll see if it works. You know, there are people working behind the scenes all the time to bring you free radio, entertainment, interesting topics, educational things, and fun. It's what we do and have for 102 years at WJR, and we're so glad that you have been an important part of it for a long time. Anything else, Mikey?
Last night was the NBA draft, and Dusty May was able to draft one of his players from Michigan to the Dallas Mavericks.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that must have been fun.
Yeah, what's his name?
I don't know. I saw it somewhere, but I didn't pay too much attention. You know, and he's on the top of the front page of the Detroit News again. I'm trying to move on.
Ah.
You know, every time I see Dusty, I feel sad. I mean, I'm glad we had him, but he's gone.
Right.
And this is the kind of business they set up, all these people in college athletics and pros and all of that. And I've never been for it. It wouldn't have happened without the portal and NIL and all the other things that now, well, right. I don't want to go down that
path. Morenz Johnson, but then the Pistons traded up and got Abuke Okori. I know nothing about him, but hopefully he works out.
Abuke Okori, draft number 17 position.
Yeah, I
saw something else. Oh, this is a one-liner, and it speaks for itself. Gen Z supports signing prenups, sees it as financial planning, according to the experts. Well, they're absolutely right.
Right.
That's it.
They came up in a world where divorce was very common.
Too easy and too common.
So it's not surprising, and yeah, like you said, it's smart.
It's very smart. Okay, enough said. Heading toward 1:15 at WJR. You know, when it comes time to call a home services contractor, a lot of people have a major cringe moment. I don't blame you. I've had those same moments. We've all heard or experienced nightmare scenarios of bad experiences with home service companies, and no one wants to get the runaround, especially when it comes to their home. And we're all looking for a contractor that we can trust. This is especially true when it comes to a roofing contractor. It's much better than it used to be, but there's still trouble out there. That's why you need to do what I did, call Victor's Home Solutions. I was a paying customer. You need to repair or replace your roof, Victor's Home Solutions. They've built their business on taking good care of the customer. They take as good a care of the customer as they do of the roof, and they've done a tremendous job in both counts. In fact, they built their business around three simple promises that they make to every customer they work with. One, they'll respect your time by being on time to appointments, promptly following up and doing what they say they'll do. That shouldn't be a big deal, but trust me, it's huge. Being on time to appointments. Number two, you get a perfect roof installed by their highly skilled roofing crews. That matters. And number three, They offer a 50-year leak-free guarantee on every roof they install. No other roofing company can offer you a longer, more comprehensive warranty. Let me say it again. It all comes down to trust. When you hire a roofing contractor, there isn't one I trust more than Victor's Home Solutions from my own personal experience and the experience I know you're going to have. Right now, get $500 off a new roof and no interest financing until 2031. Are you kidding me? Set up your free 21-point roof inspection by calling this simple number, 866-VICTORS, 866-VICTORS. Now, you can do this online very simply at Victors, V-I-C-T-O-R-S, victors.com. Again, 866-VICTORS or victors.com. You will be glad that you did this. It is 117 at 760 WJR. I don't have this today's free press. They're welcome to send it to me as an important member of the media, but that's up to them. But I have a copy of it, a picture of it sent by my good friend Tony Michaels, the Wizard of Oz and Ooze, with the Ford fireworks and all the other great things that he makes happen. But he's on the front page of the Detroit Free Press, a piece written by Brian McCollum, pop music critic, Detroit Free Press, USA Today Network. In the headline, "The Man Who Makes the Tunes Pop with the Booms." And there's our good friend Tony Michaels. So either pick up a free press or look for it online. Congratulations, Tony. You never get as much credit as you deserve for all the good things that you do. And now we're already looking forward to America's Thanksgiving Parade presented by Gardner White. And for that matter, we'll, of course, have the, what else? Help me on this, Mike Parsons. What do we have before the parade? We have the, I can't
say that one more time.
Oh, the thing I emcee.
Hunger Free in the D.
No.
Oh, the Hobnobble Gobble.
I couldn't think of the name.
We'd get there eventually.
Yeah, Hobnobble Gobble.
You're in too hot a demand.
I'm a little busy. I just got another call from somebody for something from Ann Arbor, and I'll do what I can do. You know, I continue to. It gives me joy to help people who are in need. I wish I could write big checks, but I'm not rich. There are a lot of people we know who write big checks, and I think that's fabulous. And believe me, if I could, I'd write big checks. But I write them with my ability to get in front of a microphone and help them raise money. Ron Robinson is here, state representative, Republican from Utica, former anchor and reporter at WJR. And we're going to talk about the framework for the 2027 budget reached by the State House and Senate. But I first want to ask you, Ron, as a guy in the political business, what your reaction is to the communist, anti-capitalist, anti-Semitic politicians who are now what we used to call the Democrat Party in New York City.
Yeah, it's puzzling. First off, thanks for having me on. It's good to talk to you, Paul W. Yeah,
sure.
It's kind of a mess that way. It's a bizarre dynamic that's been created over the last 10 years, and I'm puzzled by it just as you are, sir.
I just don't understand. You know, especially at a time when we are reminded by people who come and visit our country for the World Cup just how great they're finding America and Americans to be. We've got this nest of people in specifically New York City and elsewhere that somehow just don't see it. They don't get it. They don't accept it.
I see it every day because I sit next to, and I'm not going to name names, it's not important, but there's a legislator who's Jewish, practicing Jew, and she has to sit behind another legislator who puts a Palestinian flag up at their desk. It's a weird dynamic.
Jeez. Oh, man, oh, man. All right. Well, let's talk about what we asked you to come on and talk about. As House Speaker Matt Hall says, a framework for an agreement on the 2027 state budget is signed as talks continue with Governor Gretchen Whitmer and Senate Majority Leader Winnie Brinks. What can you fill us in on from your bird's eye view?
Well, it's very exciting, Paul W., that we have a budget framework that's been signed off by, as you mentioned, the governor, the Senate, and, of course, the House. And it's very exciting for Michigan taxpayers, too, because there's going to be no tax increase. There's going to be no rating of the rainy day fund. And at the end of the day, we're going to have a smaller budget than we did last year. And the things that we are investing on, like roads and our education, the ROI is just through the roof. So I'm very excited about the basic budget framework that's set out. And then now the real work begins as far as ironing it out and dotting the T's and getting it with committees. And I know I'm meeting with Senator Hertel in the next couple of days to iron out the military and veterans budget. So this is going to happen very rapidly. But at the end of the day, I could not be more pleased that we got the budget framework set, agreed by all three prongs. And we should have a really strong budget that's less than last year in the next couple of weeks, hopefully.
Well, that was the next question, Representative Robertson, because the legislature has, by law, set a July 1st deadline for finalizing the budget each year, but there are no penalties for missing that deadline. And I think the 2026 budget wasn't passed until early in the morning, October 3rd, which is pretty far from July 1st.
Yeah, we were here that very late that night. But to your point, you know, I think Speaker Hall in one of his press conferences laid out a couple of days ago that I don't think there's been the July 1st reached in quite some time. I think even under the Democratic trifecta, I think they were talking July 15th, July 16th. But at the end of the day, you know, I'm more focused on the specifics of each of my budget and the overall budget framework than I am. As you mentioned, it's not going to be anywhere near that. I predict that this is a question I get asked all the time. When's the budget going to be done? And I don't have a crystal ball, but I'd be shocked if it wasn't done in the next couple of weeks.
Another quick note, Ron Robinson, state representative, the Republican from Utica, former anchor and reporter here at WJR. Yep. So much excitement. We're still feeling it with the F-15EX Eagle fighter mission. Really sending shockwaves of optimism throughout our state, in your own words. And the fact that Selfridge is back is a big deal, and that's weighing heavily on everyone's mind in a very good way.
Absolutely. These 21 F-15EX fighter jets are state-of-the-art, among the best fighter planes that we have in this country, and they're going to be residing at Selfridge, creating some new jobs. I think there'll be a lot of technology and industrial companies that move into the area because of it. But, you know, I know a lot of me and my other counterparts are talking about $850 million of economic impact every year. I project it's going to be more than that over the next several years. This is going to fan out into the entire mitten of the state, and it's just a big win for Michigan all the way around.
And we'll end with that happy news, Ron Robinson. Always a pleasure, sir.
Thank you. Likewise. Thank you, sir.
State Representative, Republican from Utica, former anchor and reporter at WJR, Ron Robinson, at 128 on WJR. Oh, boy, watching the whole Savannah Guthrie story now for quite some time has been gut-wrenching. Imagine how tough it is for the entire family. And, in fact, she just brought this up yesterday on the Today Show, saying it has, in fact, been agonizing. The whole family's been in agony from the beginning. And she shared that after this report came out that there was indeed a second ransom note that had been sent to at least one media outlet back in February that claimed that her mother, the 84-year-old mom, Nancy Guthrie, was in fact already dead. Well, of course, that got a lot of people talking. Because a lot of us have assumed, we just had to assume, that she was gone. But there was proof, or at least alleged proof, that that was the case. So then you start to ask yourself, well, why in the world didn't anyone say anything? Why didn't they tell us? I could think of no one better to talk to about this and ask than our next guest, Andy Arena, the great director of the Detroit Crime Commission, former special agent in charge of the FBI Detroit office. Andy, thanks for letting us lean on you all the time.
Hi, Paul. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you. As simply as you can explain it, why do you think law enforcement kept a ransom note claiming that Nancy Guthrie had died a secret for so long?
Well, this whole investigation has been really troubling, Paul. And, you know, obviously we're all outsiders to this. I do have some experience, but, I'm kind of sitting in the bleachers with everybody else looking at this. And it just seems like there was, not at least early on, not a whole lot of cooperation between federal and local law enforcement, which is it usually does not lead to good things. And so if you know, information was not being shared, if access was being denied to certain parts of the investigation, or being kind of held close hold, you know, that's not a good thing. So, you know, it sounds like there were a number of letters that came in. Some of them were quickly dismissed as you know, not being being true. But a couple of these, you know, they believe came from somebody who had direct knowledge. And so, you know, that would lead me to believe there was something in those letters that only the kidnappers or somebody, you know, intimately involved in this would know. Right. So that's why law enforcement doesn't share a whole lot of information. Right. They want to make sure that if something does come in, that it would be from somebody that, you know, was directly involved would only know. So there's just been a lot of missteps. And, you know, obviously, unfortunately, this is a high profile case. So this is when you really can't afford to have missteps like this.
You know, you really, and you touch on this, and you've told us this before, Andy Arena, through your own experience with the FBI, the fact that the local police department, sheriff's department, whatever it was, didn't really fully cooperate with people who are in a much better position to try to solve problems like this is mind-blowing. I cannot think of any good reason that they would not have cooperated with the feds. And, you know, once the feds got involved, all of a sudden they found video that no one thought was available from a doorbell camera. They brought all their resources to bear that you really wish they could have done that from the very beginning. What happens to these people who made such foolish mistakes, the locals, in not helping out and reaching out and working with the feds?
Well, Paul, I think in the old days, you know, there was a knock against the FBI that, you know, they would kind of come in and take over and take credit for everything. You know, we obviously had several high-profile kidnapping cases here during my time with the FBI, and the Vail Buchanan case down in Monroe and the Morency boys, the three brothers, yeah. Which back in the press now, right? So, you know, the way I always approached it was, look, I have resources you don't have. I'm going to come in and we're going to work together. And I'm not coming in to take over. I'm not coming in to take credit. You know, you could stand in front of the cameras. This is your town, right? You have to live here, and you have to go home at night. So, you know, I think a lot of it is just the approach that the FBI takes. But some of this stuff is just old historical nonsense. But it doesn't serve, in the end, Paul, doesn't serve anybody any good.
No, not at all. So just as a reminder to folks, if they're not following this anymore as closely as they were, the first note that we knew about demanded a ransom of millions of dollars for her return. The second note said that her mom, that Nancy Guthrie, was dead. The culprit did not mean to kill her. Now, they did not apologize for her death. They just made it clear that she died and they did not mean to kill her. But this is now 5 months since Mrs. Guthrie was removed from her home in Arizona. And the FBI came in and found the video, the evidence at the crime scene, including her blood on the front steps, her health issues, her disappearance without her daily medications, all the things that the family needed to worry about. And Savannah Guthrie is just saying, as soon as yesterday, please, 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 somebody out there knows something. Please help us. Give us some information. They want closure. I'm sure they know. They don't want to know it, but they know that their mother is dead. And they just want to get closure. And I don't know if they're ever going to be able to get that, Andy.
Well, you know, Paul, I think you hit it on a couple times. You know, I mean, the chances that she is deceased, I mean, that's pretty high. I mean, it's probably pretty close to 100%. I mean, I think we all kind of have accepted that. So, yeah, I think there's two issues. There's closure, and from a law enforcement standpoint, you know, you want to bring these people to justice. So, you know, and as you said, that's the second letter, second note saying that, well, we didn't mean it. You know, I think it was pre-existing health issues or whatever, something that may have happened during the event. But it doesn't exonerate you. I mean, you still put that person, there's still felony totally homicide issues here. I mean, you put them in that position, and basically, without your actions, they would still be alive. So,
which is why they're going to step up and help alleviate the family's pain, because anything they do to help them find the remains or anything else could lead to them being found and prosecuted.
Exactly, Paul. It's not going to be them. It's going to be some third party who may have some outside information. But you're exactly right. Yeah, they're not going to give themselves up, because they're still facing some pretty serious charges.
Yeah. Andy, always a pleasure. How are things going at the Detroit Crime Commission?
All good. Actually, I'm just leaving Western Golf and Country Club. We had our annual board luncheon, and all's good.
Oh, good. Anytime we can help you with any of that stuff, you let us know.
I will, Paul. Thank you.
Andy Arena, director of the Detroit Crime Commission and former special agent in charge of the FBI Detroit office, and a wonderful resource to all of us here at WJR at 144. We said this earlier, Michigan gas prices down 73 cents since last month. Lowest price point since April. We talked about Tucker Carlson saying he's done supporting Republicans. He says, I'm out. I don't know that anyone cares. Like I say, I used to watch Tucker, but I haven't watched him ever since he left Fox and is doing whatever he is doing. I am glad, Mike, that though we had Chief Bettison on,
mm-hmm.
At the fireworks, he did not bring up the fact that a young man had been shot, because it really had nothing to do with the fireworks, and it would have put, you know, all of us would have thought, oh no, what happened or whatever, when it really had nothing to do with the fireworks, as far as I can tell now with the information coming out. Do you know anything else?
Yeah, well, and it was weird because, like, literally right as we hit break, we heard about it and
came up on our phones. Yeah.
Yeah. So from what I understand, this happened at Cadillac Square, which is about less than a mile. It's a little bit of a ways away from Hart Plaza. So I'm sure there was a crowd of people watching the fireworks there, but it wasn't, you know, in the perimeter. And they saw somebody, a group of kids. One of the kids had what looked like a really heavy backpack, and they found out that he had an assault-style weapon. And at first they tried to detain him, but he ran. And the officer that shot the suspect was afraid for his safety and the safety of everyone there, because, you know, what was he doing with an assault-style rifle and a big crowd like that? And to the police officer's credit, they rendered aid to the guy, and he's going to survive. But, yeah, that could have been much, much worse.
They always do that. It's the hardest thing about being a cop is that a guy who was just shooting at you and tried to kill you, and you shoot them and get them down, you then have to render aid to them when you just assume they die. But they don't do that. Cops are trained. And they do the right thing.
I also hear that they were scrubbing social media before the event, trying to see if anyone was planning like a teen takeover or something. And they found somebody trying to organize a teen takeover during the fireworks. And they actually talked to the kid and talked him out of, you know, doing whatever he was planning on doing.
Well, the chief is great, and the men and women he represent are great. We are so lucky to be surrounded by so many great people in law enforcement in our city of Detroit and in the surrounding areas with sheriff deputies and everybody else. I did see just today in the news that more than I would have guessed, but 180 minors violated Detroit's curfew on fireworks day. 180.
Yeah, right. So those officers were busy.
That's a lot.
I almost got a ticket because I...
Well, you do look under 18.
I had to cut people off in traffic to make
He sends me a note. I was lucky because I had Metro cars and the amazing lathe weaving in and out and getting us there. So we were up there. I was there before Mike, and he sends me a note saying, I am right in front, and I've been sitting here for 1 hour.
Yeah,
I can hear the frustration in your text.
Yeah, I don't know. I was gonna call and get one of the people we had on staff to, I don't know, park my car, because I could have literally walked to our broadcast location, but I had to get to our parking garage. And yeah, I was out in front of the rent set for an hour, and that's when I started having to drive like a person that I don't like. But, you know, well, the show must go on.
I love the fact that Kyle Emmy, the youngest of all of us, was in the same position that all of us have been in the past, where we get a call from one of our elders saying, come and sit in my car. I've got to get up there. But you didn't have to do it.
Oh, yeah, I felt like that would have been big timing somebody. But I don't know. I had to get to.
You had a responsibility to be there.
One of the police officers said, you can't cut people off. I said, I got somewhere to be at 7. He says, buddy, everyone's got somewhere to be at 7.
Well, he was right about that, too.
I still,
but, you know, it's okay to pull the broadcast card at that point. Hey, speaking of the broadcast card, coming up, JR Afternoon with the one and only Ryan Ermani.
Paul, how you doing, my friend?
I'm doing well. I hope you're doing great. I don't think you've ever had a bad day.
Oh, I have, absolutely. There's no question about it. I just try to limit the bad day to one bad day and not let it evolve into another and another. Don't let one bad day beat you twice. That's my motto.
That's a great motto. Don't let one bad day beat you twice.
That's
right. I love that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's actually... Don Canham, former athletic director at the University of Michigan,
knew him well,
who hired Bo Schembechler, of course. That was one of his main mantras. Don't let one loss beat you twice, meaning, you know, don't go out there and lose on Saturday and stick your head in the sand and woe is me and allow that to affect your preparation moving forward to get beat the next week. Don't let one loss beat you twice. I've evolved it a little bit.
Well, you did a great job with it. And those were two great men. And imagine, I mean, I'm not going to suggest they've been spinning in their graves, but imagine their reaction to college athletics overall for Don Canham and for Bo, very specifically, college football, let alone college basketball and all the rest of the sports.
I think they're spinning, Paul. I think
they have got to be spinning, and I long for those good old days. I really do.
You got it. I'm with you.
All right. Well, in that case... let's take the rest of the day off. Well, no, wait. I can now because I'm done. But now you're taking over. JR Afternoon, the one, the only, Ryan Ermani. You don't want to miss a second, so stand by for news. As you're on your way to making each and every day count, each day is a gift. And I thank you for tuning in and always being an important part of the WJR audience, the best there is. See you on Friday. Regards, Paul W. Smith.